I want to express my personal appreciation for the praying yesterday morning in behalf of our British Fund Drive Program for Progress that gets officially underway on February the 2nd, Monday night in Edinburgh. We'll be training our key people, and then each night that week we'll be in a different city working our way down to London, and then over the weekend we'll be having two meetings in London. And then we'll follow that same schedule the following week and provide training sessions again for these 150 key people. And I think that if they knew the kind of prayer support that they were getting from you yesterday morning, that they would also want me to express their appreciation for that. The Lord has given us a couple breakthroughs already. We've faced some, I would consider, some major problems in conjunction with our plans for this type of fundraising program in Great Britain. One of the problems we faced is that the British people are not oriented to the type of fundraising that we have in America, where needs are boldly presented and people are given an opportunity to respond. And for our staff and our key people to come to the place where they could get behind that kind of a program enthusiastically, I think, was a real breakthrough, and the Lord did that for us. We've been working on this program, planning it, and cultivating our people for a year and a half. And now we have one more major hurdle, and that'll be determined, of course, as we begin to make our calls from the middle of February on through part of March. It'll be determined on the response of the British contacts, our prospective donors, the friends of the navigators, people who have been on the log list, some occasional donors, and friends of key contacts and their family. So as the Lord lays this on your heart, that's the key thing to pray for. Pray that God will lay it on the hearts of the people to invest regularly in the support of the navigator work in Great Britain. A year ago at this time, I was in Australia and New Zealand, and one of the purposes of the trip was to begin to develop some plans for broadening the base of navigator support in that part of the world. And again, this July, I'll return and spend another 2 or 3 weeks down there, and this time we'll begin to lay our plans, and we'll do some kind of a fundraising program in Australia and in New Zealand in 1974. In talking with Scotty last week, I learned that in his thinking, Singapore is also in need of this kind of broadening the base of support type of program. So on the July trip, we'll spend some time, or I'll spend some time in Singapore, and we'll begin to see how the Lord might lead us, what he might lead us to do in that area of the world. But this is something, of course, that we've talked about before, but we need to be thinking and working to broaden the base of financial and prayer support for the navigator work worldwide. We talk about the fact that during this decade, we want to establish a broad enough base in terms of men and money and prayer support so that in the 1980s, we can get into every major country of the world. And we might just call this whole program, this whole development program, Decade of Development, because that's what we're headed for. And we need prayer, and we need wisdom to know how to go about this. You know, I don't think the navigators are characterized as an organization that talks very much about money. We don't very often schedule a main meeting like this in our conferences to talk about money. But you know, Jesus did. He talked about money. Money was the theme, or in some way entered into the majority of the sermons delivered by Jesus. A third of his 38 parallels dealt with the right and the wrong use of money. And the 1 out of 6 verses in Matthew, Mark, and Luke deal with money. Money is a respectable subject, and on occasion, we must address ourselves to it. And this morning, we're going to talk about money. We're going to talk about financing the navigator work. And we're going to talk about this in 3 aspects: the future, the present, and the past. First, the future. The fact that gift income has increased by 30% annually the past 3 years suggests that the Navigators are operating from a position of strength financially. But this may not be true. A projection of what our income will be year by year through 1983 compared with our budget estimates for that same period shows that we cannot maintain a business as usual attitude toward financing our work. If we are to continue our present growth rate and accomplish our worldwide ministry objectives these next 10 years, it's going to be necessary to do more than we have done in recent years to adequately finance these plans. For instance, over the past 3 years, the number of new donors supporting the Navigator work in America have increased by 22%. 1972, we had 22% more new donors than we had for 71. This is the pattern. But if we do nothing to increase this annual growth rate of new donors, we will end this next 10-year period short of our budget projections by $26 million. We'll be $26 million short of being able to accomplish in our ministries that which we feel God is leading us to do. And we've looked at our financial future from a number of angles, from the donor aspect, from the annual growth rate aspect, and each one of these studies tells us the same thing. We cannot maintain a business as usual attitude toward finances. If we take the attitude that doing a thorough job in the ministry will automatically provide the necessary funds, we're going to end up being some of the nicest residents on the poor farm. It might be realistic for a local area ministry, this attitude of doing a thorough job in the ministry will provide adequate funds, but it is not adequate for a worldwide sending agency. So from the standpoint of our financial future, the Navigators are not operating from a position of strength. We're not in serious trouble yet. We can change this, and we must. This is something we must do. We must move from where we are to a place where we have financial depth and strength. Now, in addition to these long-range needs, there are also some immediate financial problems. While gift income for the ministry, increases 30% annually, undesignated gift income last year increased by only 3%. Now, this undesignated gift income, sometimes we refer to this as where needed most. And these funds are used primarily for headquarters administrative expenses. And for the first time since our national fund drive in 1964, undesignated gift income for 1973 is not going to be sufficient to cover administrative expenses. This month we will go $7,000 in the red. And we are estimating that we need approximately $14,000 a month additional income for where needed most in order to end 1973 in the black. Now, one solution to this problem might be to reduce headquarters expenses. Another would be to increase the income for where needed most. A third would be to deficit spend, in hopes that the rapture would occur before we spent ourselves out of existence. All in favor of that? Uh, Well, the best solution, of course, is a combination of the two, to reduce our expenses at headquarters and to increase the income. Well, the Finance Board has already screened the headquarters budget for 1973 and reduced it wherever possible. But the only way we can reduce it beyond where it is now is by eliminating certain functions or eliminating certain departments. But this is not a realistic solution. The headquarters is a service agency. And a service agency must respond to the demands made upon it. In the last year, there were 500,000 financial transactions in the data processing and receipting and finance departments. Why? Because of all the new donors, because of all the new people on the staff, all the new bank accounts. We have to respond to the demand that's made upon us. We have a schedule for the production of new Bible study materials and other new materials that are being produced as a result of the work done last summer by the research and development gang. Well, in order to get those materials produced by next September, we've got to add at least two new people to the art department, and we've got to have an editorial director to see to it that that work is done right. And this morning, in talking about this with Jack and Skip and Leroy, we agreed that the divisions would provide these men, and they would also raise their support and their salaries before sending them to headquarters to help take some of the financial pressure off. But you see, how can we eliminate those services and functions that need to be done, that have to be done? See, we can't eliminate the president's office, can we? I mean, he better stay there. We don't want to cut that. And how about his staff? Can we eliminate Jim Downing or Waldron Scott or Walt Henriksen and those who are part of his staff in leadership? I don't think so. What about the plan giving department? Well, this department is now almost in its third year since we reorganized it under John Watts. And it's reaching the place now where it's productive and will be making money for the Navigators. So we can't eliminate that. And you can't eliminate receipting and accounting and data processing. In fact, data processing has enabled us to do a much greater volume of work with less people. In 1964, we had 64 people in the office. And we cut the fat then. And we eliminated staff and eventually got our staff worked down to some 30 people in that office as a result of the computers and functions that we eliminated. And it wasn't until this last year that headquarters staff reached that figure of 64 again. It's now up to 67. But we can go through the office department by department, the materials department, if we eliminate that, and shipping and printing. You see, what are we doing? Well, if we eliminate them, we eliminate the net profit that they made last year of $137,000. For a year and a half, we looked for an editor or a copywriter, and finally the Lord brought Carol Clifton along, and we desperately need her work. We can't eliminate her. The art department has two people in it now. They've worked every night for the last 2 months, I believe, and weekends. And Don isn't here yet. He hopes to be able to get down Thursday. We've got to add people. We can't cut. We can't eliminate. And that's all the departments there are. There aren't any other departments. Except for the tape department. Excuse me. Ken Metzger is going to have my scalp. But you see, Ken and his cohort who work in the day, they make money for us. So we haven't accomplished anything by eliminating the tape department. Furthermore, the 1973 headquarters budget hasn't suddenly ballooned out of proportion. It still is 10% of the total NAV budget, which is what it has been for the last number of years. Therefore, the only practical solution, I believe, is to increase the where needed most income. Now, how can we do that? Well, before I talk about that, let me just summarize and say, these then are our financial problems. We face the possibility of a $26 million shortage over the next 10 years. We have inadequate income for our headquarters services. And we have an international ministry fund with no funds. That's another financial need that we have. Last year, $112,000 was appropriated from the International Ministry Fund for ministry needs primarily in Emma and in Pan. And that appropriation of $112,000 depleted that fund. The International Ministry Fund over the past years has been funded primarily from surplus where needed most funds. And we built up a sizable amount. But now that's all gone. Yet this year, just like in previous years, there will be ministry projects and ministry needs for which we have no means of raising the money. We don't have enough conferences for all those projects. And some of them do not lend themselves as exciting conference offering projects. And the best thing to do, therefore, is to appropriate funds for those. So we have an international ministry fund that is out of money. What are we going to do? Well, at the December Divisional Directors Conference, the Lord confirmed to all of us, in all of our hearts, the need for a major fundraising effort in the United States. You'll recall that originally we were planning to raise funds for the construction of a new headquarters office building along with various Glen Eyre improvements. These plans now have been scratched. And in their place, we are planning an extensive national fundraising program aimed at establishing a much broader base of financial support throughout America. Funds will be raised for all aspects of the work, except, of course, for personnel in contact points, as that violates some of our training concepts. But funds will be raised for area reps and for RDs, those who are below budget, for missionaries, for ministry projects, for administrative costs, and for capital improvements. We'll raise money during that fundraising campaign for all aspects of the Navigator work. Now, while it's conceivable that we could develop plans and materials in time for a fall fundraising program, still fall is a very critical time for starting student ministries on campuses, therefore not an ideal time for starting a national fundraising program. We have therefore decided that the national fundraising program would start early in 1974. We'll launch it in the Southern Division approximately February 1st. Then we'll launch it in the Western Division around the middle of the month of February and get started in the Northern Division around the 1st of March. Each area should plan on giving 3 to 4 weeks for an intensive time of calling on prospects, telling these prospects about the Navigator vision, about the Navigator objectives, and giving those prospects an opportunity to invest in this ministry. During these weeks, fundraising activities will become top priority throughout the area, and normal area routines will become second priority. Now, we've found from past experience that an extensive fundraising program like this stimulates giving for all aspects of the work. We've also discovered that an intensive effort, or we also believe that an intensive effort next year should broaden the base of our support sufficiently to avert any serious financial difficulties through the remainder of the decade. An organization like ours can do an intensive national fund drive about once every 7 to 10 years. And the last one we did was in 63 and 4, and it lapped over, I think, into 65. During that time, we subscribed $5,600,000 for the budget. And the momentum of that, I believe, has carried us right through 1972. Well, actually, we had to, in order to end the year in the black, we had to appropriate $11,000 from some reserves to pay for $11,000 in administrative costs that Where Needed Most did not cover for 72. So this kind of program would take place once every 7 to 10 years, probably. This long-range, extensive national fund drive that we're talking about, however, will not resolve the immediate needs that we have for 1973 relative to the Where Needed Most and the International Ministry Funds. And in discussing these immediate needs with the Finance Board and with Jack and Skip and Leroy, we've come up with the following suggestion. We want each one of you to prayerfully consider how much you could give to the Where Needed Most Fund. And then we want you to prayerfully consider the possibility of recruiting 3 or 4 other people to give toward that fund. I had someone in the office double check. We took all the names of all of us who are at this conference, and we discovered that during 1972, 65 of us, and when I say of us, I'm thinking of a couple as one unit. So there were 65 of us who gave regularly to Where Needed Most. Now that leaves a difference of 190 of us who during 1973 could prayerfully consider this and could do something about it. For instance, if the 190 of us who were not giving this past year could give $25 a month toward Where Needed Most, that would provide an additional income of $4,500 a month. Some of you can't give that much, but some of you could give more. Then we want you to prayerfully consider the possibility of recruiting when you get home this next month, have it done before February is out, to see if you can't recruit 3 or 4 additional people who could give toward Where Needed Most. If you had 4 people, each of whom could give $10 a month, and if we all got 4, that would produce an income of over $10,000. So you combine the $10,000 with the $4,500, and the Where Needed Most would have what it's going to need for 1973. Now, I know that some of you are not up to your budget. In fact, some of you are considerably below budget. And therefore, to ask you to go out and get some donors for Where Needed Most, well, that's a difficult thing for me to ask you to do, or for us, if I'm representing the DDs, and I am. But we realize this factor, and that is that you can't outgive the Lord. If you invest some time and some effort, and you get some donors to give to Where Needed Most, I don't believe that you can do that without affecting your income. Because I believe that God is going to see to it that your income is also aided, whether you ask specifically about your needs or not. As you leave the auditorium this morning, I've asked some of the fellows to pass out a pledge card. We'd like to give every one of you a pledge card. We'd like to have you talk about this, pray about it, and then make a decision. Perhaps you could turn your pledge cards in tomorrow morning or Friday morning in your prayer groups. But decide what you feel the Lord would have you do with regard to this Where Needed Most need. And then indicate that on the pledge card. I'm talking now about new money. If you're already giving 10 or 15 or whatever it is to Where Needed Most, don't put that on your pledge card. In fact, if that's the limit of what you feel the Lord would have you do, then don't turn in a pledge card. That's fine. Then after you get home, we'll send you a letter from headquarters with 3 or 4 more pledge cards, and pray about this and see if the Lord doesn't lead you to some people and make it possible for you to recruit some additional help to the Where Needed Most Fund. Now, this is not a generic solution to the problem. As administrative expenses continue to rise, it becomes increasingly difficult to secure necessary funds. Why is this? Because people like to give to people. It's always more difficult to raise money for administrative costs, or say for where needed most. Therefore, raising funds for the where needed most or the administrative costs is not in itself, I don't believe it's in itself a realistic solution to the problem or a generic solution to the problem. For instance, in 1974, in order to support the administrative costs adequately, we would all have to go out and secure the help of 10 new donors. Because administrative costs will go up by $25,000 a month for the year 1974. Well, we just can't resolve our problem that way. We have to look for a more generic solution. Now, many mission organizations finance administrative expenses by having staff members include in their individual budgets a portion of that cost. The amount varies, but an organization very similar to ours adds 17.5% to each person's budget. That's the way they resolve their problem. We don't want to do this. For years, we have tried to avoid an administrative cost, adding that to budgets. It may not be necessary, or it may not be possible for us to forever avoid this. It may be that we will have to add at some time a 10% charge to all budgets in the U.S. We are doing this for overseas. We're taking 5% for all of our American overseas representatives for administrative costs. But that might be part of the solution. That might be part of the long-range generic solution that we are going to have to figure out. There are other alternatives. For instance, headquarters salaries. One of the organizations similar to ours requires that all of or most of their headquarters people raise their support before coming on assignment at headquarters. And this is very possibly something that we could begin to do. And 60% of the budget is salary, goes for salary. Another good possibility for financing administrative costs will be the sale of materials. As our research and development team begins to develop more and more materials, and if they're really good, then our sales, if we promote them properly, could grow tremendously. And there are much larger organizations than ours, such as Jehovah's Witnesses, who support all of their administrative expenses through the sale and the promotion of their various materials. So we have several alternatives, and this is something that we will be working on this year. But for the immediate needs, we have to turn to you. I don't know of any other solution. So we want you to pray about this. We want you to go to work on this. And we just feel that if we'll join hearts and really make this a matter of prayer, that the Lord is going to meet this need. And He'll also meet our individual needs for those of you who are below budget. Incidentally, I wanted to mention this morning that we are adjusting our direct mail program so that donors who give predominantly to area staff will no longer receive the same appeal letters as the others on our mailing list. This is aimed at resolving the tensions over headquarters sort of reaching out and fleecing the local flock. Our long-range objective here is to get completely away from soliciting funds by direct mail from donors who give predominantly to the staff. And I think that this is going to be something significant once we achieve it. Let me pause just a moment here and see if I've overlooked something. Maybe Jack or Skip or Leroy want to remind me of something we discussed that we haven't covered, or maybe one of you would like to ask a question for clarification on what we've just been talking about here regarding the where needed most fun. Any questions on this or any suggestions that you fellows want to remind me of? Yeah. Yeah, I have a note on that, Skip. Any question on clarification? Harv? Yes, that would be a possibility. And let me inject here that I feel that as we develop plans for this National Fund Drive, that we have got to figure out some way in which you can be involved in the development of those plans. We do not want to formulate these plans at headquarters and then come out and give them to you and say, this is what we're going to do. We might be able to formulate some general ideas, but then I want to come out after I get back from Great Britain and get out into the areas and give you an opportunity to help formulate the fundraising plans and the policies. I think some of you probably have some ideas that we have never thought of. We want this to be your plan so that when we kick off this national fund, the intensive part of this national fund drive, next year, a year from now, that you can feel like, yes, I had a part in formulating that. This is our plan and I can give myself to it. I think that's going to be very important. I think that our approach on this will be very similar to what we did in 1963 and 64, where we actually trained our staff and our basic workforce. It'll probably be the disciple makers and on up. And we would provide training for all of us, refresher courses for those of us who have done it before, and training classes, which is what we'll be doing in Great Britain these next couple of weeks, so that we are trained, actually trained, in the principles of calling on people and talking with them about the ministry of the navigators and making our needs known, doing it effectively, but doing it inoffensively. Thank you for reminding me of that. I had a note on that somewhere and passed it over. All right, now let me take the few minutes that we have left to discuss briefly with you our financial folklore. I want to share with you why we raise money the way we do. I want to talk about why we don't just pray about our financial needs and let God supply. I think that many of us have the feeling like that would be preferable. I think many of us have the feeling like that would be more honoring to the Lord. That would be more spiritual. If we could just pray about our needs, and if our prayers and our lives were such, then God would supply. And I think these are very valid thoughts and very valid feelings, and I think we have to talk about them. Over the years, a number of us have struggled with these same thoughts, these same feelings, and yet we feel very definitely that the Lord has led us to do our fundraising the way we have, and I want to talk about why. When I first became associated with the Navigators in 1947, the financial policy was to tell no one but God. We never took an offering at a conference. We never said, we have some needs, will you pray for us? You couldn't even say that. You could not allude to financial needs in any way, obliquely or directly. Dawson had adopted the policy of George Mueller, who never made his needs known except to God, and God always supplied the needs of George Mueller. Dawson followed this policy rather consistently for about 15 years. And he used to delight in telling the stories of how God would miraculously meet the needs of the work, his needs personally or the needs of the ministry. He delighted in telling these stories. But beginning around 1946, finances again became an increasingly difficult problem. Bills accumulated. Funds seemed to just not be coming in. Then a piece of property was sold, the bills paid off. The feeling was this is just a cycle. The Lord will start providing our needs again, but the bills would build up. And it was a continuing problem. And finally, Dawson decided that the navigator should follow Paul's example, where Paul supported himself by working with his hands. We have evidence that he did this in Acts 18, 1 Thessalonians 2, and 2 Thessalonians 3. We read here about Paul made tents. Well, there wasn't much demand for tents in the United States in 1946. So the navigators decided to engage in three types of revenue-producing projects. A couple of the men, Cecil Davidson in particular, had electronic background, and so the navigators opened in downtown Los Angeles a radio store where they sold new radios and repaired old radios. It was called Reliable Radio Repair. And then another one, I think this was the brainchild of Don Rosenberger, who a number of us remember very well. Don was the salesman promoter type, the type who could sell many ice boxes to one Eskimo. And he started a small business called the Superior Sign Service, SSS. And the concept behind this was that they would sell illuminated signs, the background illuminated white, with big plastic letters that could be inserted over this white background to spell out whatever it was you wanted to advertise in your store window. And a third revenue-producing project was representing a Christian publishing house from the Wheaton area to all of the bookstores in the 11 western states. And this, incidentally, is how I became a navigator. I joined the navigators as a traveling salesman. Well, by 1950, it was clear to us that this was not God's method of support for the navigators, because by this time, Reliable Radio Repair was out of business, Superior Sign Service, and the book representing thing was not making sufficient funds to warrant its existence, so that was the end of that. But meanwhile, finances continued to be a troublesome problem. Now, Dawson used to get the gang together at the NAV home in South Pasadena at 509 Monterey Road, and we'd get together for a day of prayer, and we'd pray about our financial needs, and we'd talk about it, and we'd try to ask probing questions like, why is God not supplying? What is he trying to say to us? Is there sin in our lives? Well, I was a brand new Christian in those days, living in the Navigator home, having real problems with cigarettes, and I thought, yeah, there's sin in the camp. But I never confessed. Dawson had a little talk with me one day. He says, I understand you're having problems with cigarettes. Well, the Lord eventually gave victory. But Dawson reached the place in his thinking where he felt led of the Lord to put out a fleece. He decided to share the financial history of the navigators along with our recent struggles with three longtime friends of the work. And he felt that perhaps through these people, God would give some insight or God would give some direction. Now, this was an agonizing thing for Dawson to do, because to him it was a violation of a principle that he really wanted to maintain. And it was a conviction of many years. The first person he went to was a businessman. And this man said that he was very pleased to learn that the navigators needed his help. He said, I've always assumed that some foundation or some wealthy individual was picking up all of your expenses, because every time I tried to bring up the subject of finances to me, you turned me off. You wouldn't talk to me about finances. So I assumed that someone was your benefactor. But he was delighted to know that the navigators needed his help. The second person was a lady, Mrs. Kerr, the president of the Kerr Glass Corporation. And during during Dawson's explanation to Mrs. Kerr, a tear began to trickle down Mrs. Kerr's cheeks. And when Dawson saw that, it was just devastating to him. And he said, Mrs. Kerr, he said, I don't know what it is that I've said that has offended you, but he says, I apologize. And Mrs. Kerr said, Dawson, these are not tears of offense. These are tears of joy. To realize that an organization that means as much to me as the Navigators needs my help. And she began to give to the Navigator work. And for years, she gave substantially on a monthly basis. She was delighted to invest in the work of the Navigators. The third man that Dawson went to was also a businessman, and he responded in a similar way, without cheers, but glad to know that the Navigators needed his help. And as he talked with Dawson about this, he said, you know, there is a scriptural precedent for this in the scriptures. And he turned in his Bible to 1 Kings 17. And here we have the story of Elijah. You remember Elijah had predicted the flood, the drought. And this, of course, meant a famine. And at some point, the word of the Lord came to Elijah and said, go to the east and hide by the brook Cherith at the place east where it enters the Jordan River. Drink from the brook and eat what the ravens bring you, for I have commanded them to feed you. And then as we read on, we discover that the brook went dry. And perhaps the ravens stopped coming with their morsel of food. And the word of the Lord came to him again, and he said, get thee down to Zarephath, for there is a widow down there, and you make your needs known to her. She wasn't even Jewish. She was a Gentile. And this became sort of a capstone in our minds at that time, because we saw that there was a scriptural precedent for God to change his means of provision. Now, sometimes the Lord leads us and we follow eagerly. We fall in love and God leads us to get married and we eagerly follow that leading. We're like a racehorse in a starting gate waiting for the bell and the gate to open. But there are times when the Lord leads us, he tries to lead us to do things we don't want to do. And the Lord clearly led the Navigators to change their policy and to begin to make their needs known, but we did not want to do this. We had giant hang-ups emotionally, and I suppose intellectually. But in 1949, for the first time in Navigator history, a letter concerning financial needs was sent to our mailing list. The response was not miraculous, but it did resolve some immediate financial problems. And then as the pressure built up, eventually we sent out another letter. And in a year and a half, we sent out three letters making our needs known. Intellectually, we knew that God had led us to do this. But emotionally, we were struggling with it. We couldn't accept it. It was difficult for us to feel right about making our needs known. We only made our needs known when the financial pressure became acute, and even then we did it apologetically. And as I think back on that, and as I analyze my attitude, and I think the attitude of the rest of us, we felt that living by faith, quote, not making our needs known, was more spiritual. And I think we took pride in the fact that the Navigators did not make financial appeals. In 1951, the first fundraising program in Navigator history was launched. Lauren was in charge of it. The goal was $51,000. We needed the money to pay off the office building that we had acquired, and also to pay off an indebtedness on the Navigator home in South Pasadena. And we were faced with doing something we had never done before, raising money in this way, and with numerous apprehensions. For instance, we were very apprehensive about how all these Navigator constituents would feel When the navigators came out and talked with them about money, where for 15 years we had never approached them. So we had some real fears. We had doubts about whether God could be honored through such a thing. And I think our concern was reflected in the scripture that Lauren chose for this fund campaign or this responsibility. I remember what he called me into his office one morning for prayer, and he said, this is the verse that he says is sort of our verse or my verse for this program. It was 1 Kings 18, verse 36, where it says, and it came to pass at the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice that Elijah the prophet came near and said, Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that thou art God in heaven, and that I am thy servant, and that I have done these things at thy word. We wanted our constituents to feel that we had obeyed God in what we were doing. That it was not something that was being done in the energy of the flesh. Well, our conclusion after that program had been completed was that God had blessed. We went over our goal by 5%. And we also concluded that people had been blessed. And that this prayer and this verse of scripture had been answered. That was 1951. 1953, the dust had barely settled on this. Dawson Trotman came home from a trip, and he announced to us at the headquarters office that we were going to purchase this property known as Glen Eyrie in Colorado. The background on it was that Dawson had been looking for property in Colorado for a headquarters for the navigators. We wanted a headquarters where we could have a training center and a conference grounds. He had seen Glen Eyrie, concluded that it was too large and too expensive, and he'd given Billy Graham a report of Glen Eyrie because he knew the Graham Association was looking for property where they could have a Christian academy. The Graham team looked it over, decided to buy it, put down $50,000 in option money, started their fundraising program. 6 weeks before the down payment was due, Billy called a meeting in Kansas City. He announced his withdrawal from the project. He turned to Dawson. He said, Dawson, I believe God wants the navigators to buy Glen Eyrie. Will you accept this challenge? And Dawson said, yes. Well, it was obvious to everyone that God, in an unusual way, was influencing circumstances in connection with that property. There were many instances, far too many to mention, but just a couple. The owner, Mr. Strake, a Texas oil man, had reduced the sale price from $500,000 to $300,000. That in itself is significant. But Mr. Strake was a nationally known Catholic layman, knighted by the Pope on the board of directors of the University of Notre Dame. And for him to have sold that piece of property to a Protestant organization at any price was inconceivable. The only explanation was that God had worked in his heart. And let's remember, this was 20 years ago, and the climate between the Protestants and the Catholics was not nearly as warm as it is today. Bishop Cheen came to the Glen, and the Catholic Church put the pressure on Mr. Strake to break that contract in any way that he could. It took us 3 weeks to get organized. We had 6 weeks to raise $110,000. It took us 3 weeks to get organized and to print our materials, and at the end of 3 weeks, we had almost no money raised. If we failed to raise the down payment, we'd have to return all the contributions that had come in toward it. We'd have to reimburse the Graham Association for their $50,000. So there were some real risks in saying yes to this program. And to put it in perspective, let me say that our budget in those days, that year I believe the budget was about $60,000. Last year's budget was $6 million. If Sandy stood up here at this podium this week and told us that in the next 6 weeks, the navigators worldwide were going to raise $8 million, that would be proportionate to our budget then. But as the staff and friends began to tell the Glen Eyrie story and how God then and God began to lay this project on the hearts of people all around the world, and the stories are too numerous to tell of the sacrificial giving. I think of the businessman in Southern California who mortgaged his home in order to have something to give. I believe it was Demone here, Dee, you can correct me on this if I'm wrong, who you gave the money you'd been saving for your wedding dress. Is that right? It's a good story anyway. Huh? Oh, I mean, yeah, Dee, I'm sorry, Dee. You know who I mean. And our staff in Japan, they wrote to the office and they said, don't send us any money for the month of September, but take all that comes in for us and put it in the Glen Eyrie payment, and we're just going to trust God this month. We may have to tighten our belt. We may go hungry for a meal or two. But we're going to trust God. Don't send us any money. And since then, they told us that during that month, they had more. They had more food. They had more money. They had more everything than any month that they had ever experienced in the Orient. I was fundraising in the East Coast and received word to meet Dawson Trotman in Houston, Texas on September the 27th, 2 days before the deadline. When I arrived, I asked Dawson how we were doing. He said, we still need $40,000. At the end of the day, the following day, the 28th, we called our headquarters office and $20,000 had come in. So that meant that on the day of the deadline, we needed approximately, $22,000 had come in that day. We still needed $18,000. One of the businessmen in Houston who was going to be a co-signer with us on this note became excited about what God was doing. He said, I'm going to have a luncheon at the club today, and whatever you need, I'll raise. If you need $18,000 at noon today, I'll raise it. Well, just before we went to the luncheon, we called the office. $10,000 had come in. We went to the luncheon. He raised $8,000. We had what we needed. We called the office later in the afternoon to have them telegraph the money to Houston, and we found that $8,000 more had come in. Oh, this bothered Dawson. He says, I've got to tell Mr. Handcammer we don't need his money. So we went in and we talked with him about this, and Mr. Handcammer said, well, he says, let's not be premature. You may need it. There may be some closing costs that we are unaware of. And when we signed those papers, we needed an additional $5,000 for fire insurance and an additional $3,000 for legal fees. We went to the bank that afternoon to get the money, and the money wasn't there. We called the office. Oh, they said, we sent it to such and such a bank. That was the wrong bank. It was after banking hours. But Mr. Handcammer was the chairman of the board. Of the wrong bank. Well, we learned many lessons from this experience, but it did not in any way resolve our long-range financial problems. We had effectively raised funds for an exciting project, but we had not learned how to effectively raise support for long-term ministry needs. We had many more lessons to learn, and we struggled with these problems of inadequate financing from 1953 through 1963 when we began our national fund drive. Now, since then, of course, that fund drive, I think, has given us momentum and carried us right up to today. Today, though, we are back to the point now where we need to do a national fund drive. And I believe that if we do this, if we really give ourselves to this in preparation and then in the intensive phase of the calling, we can broaden our base sufficiently so that our financial needs will be met for these next 7 to 10 years. Now, let me summarize for you the lessons that I feel we've learned from the way in which God has led us. Number one, God led the navigators to change from never making needs known to making them known. And over the past number of years, as a result of that change in policy, God has supplied financial needs in direct proportion to the skill and the diligence with which we have applied that principle of making our needs known. When we neglect it, our needs are not met. And we have certainly learned that doing a thorough job in the ministry is no guarantee that necessary funds will automatically be available. This is not a realistic concept. Secondly, God can be honored and glorified through the principle of making needs known. And as a result of the Glen Eyrie down payment and other fundraising projects, God has been glorified and people have rejoiced and praised God for the effects and for the results of those fundraising programs. Fundraising can be a tremendous spiritual blessing to those who are working at it, as well as to those prospects that we call on. It is a spiritual ministry. Thirdly, our best financial resources are individuals in whose lives the Navigators have ministered, but not our only. Other resources are also good possibilities for seeking support. And these other good possibilities include foundations and churches and friends and relatives, so on. Number four, equal in importance to the funds obtained in a program like this is the result of the fundraising efforts in the lives of those of us who do it. I listed just a few. For instance, we learned to trust God in some new areas. It's not easy to go out and talk to people about money. We learn how to succeed in a difficult area that we're not familiar with. We learn how to relate to a broader segment of people. For instance, we learn how to talk to older people or to strangers. We learn how to present financial needs in an inoffensive but effective manner. We overcome some of the unscriptural hang-ups about New Testament principles of finance and how we are to go about it. And the end result of all this is that as an organization, as well as individually, we are more mature spiritually. Fifth, inviting constituents to share financially in the NAV ministry makes them feel a part. It makes them feel needed. They like this. And it helps balance the NAV tendency toward exclusiveness. And then lastly, individuals who give as a result of our having made the need known are themselves enriched and blessed. And we go back to 1 Kings 17 here, verses 14 and 15. You remember the story of the widow. She baked the little loaf of bread with the last of her meal and her oil. And the scriptures tell us that though she used the last of it, yet every day when she went back to it, there was more. And that supply did not run out until the famine had ceased. And when we encourage and challenge people to give, they are the ones who are going to be blessed. God will see to that. Well, those are the primary lessons that we've learned, and I think a very brief summary of how God has led us over the years. And that's why we do our fundraising the way that we do it. We feel that God has led us to do this. We are open to change. It may be that the Lord will completely change this in the future. The one thing we do know, and that is that we want to discover what He wants us to do and then do that. Now let me just make a couple of comments here in closing, more or less announcements. There has been talk at one of the DD meetings earlier, three months ago, we talked about the possibility of discontinuing the materials discount to staff. And so this rumor has gone out that this has happened or it might happen. As of now, it has not happened, and we are not now making plans for it to happen. So that clears that up. Then there's been another discussion on guest charges at Glen Eyrie. There is no changes in this. There was talk about the possibility of changing it. The policy, as you know, is that any staff member who comes to the Glen and stays at the Glen, he stays as guests of the International Ministry Fund, and the International Ministry Fund pays Russ Reed and Glen Eyrie so that they don't have to absorb any expenses involved in that. And there was some discussion on changing this policy, but as of now, there is no change on that. Both those policies remain the same, and there are no changes on those, so I hope that that clears that up. Now, any last-minute comments that need to be made? Okay, we've run over time a little bit. Let me just lead us in a word of prayer.